You are listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, YKHC's diabetes prevention.
Good morning and welcome to Wellness Wednesday, hosted by the YKHC Diabetes Prevention Control Department. My name is Ray Peterson, and I am the outreach specialist for the Diabetes Prevention Control. I would like to have our Diabetes Prevention Control team members come in and introduce themselves and their role in helping prevent diabetes in our region. So first up, we have Elizabeth Tressler.
Thank you, Ray. My name is Elizabeth Tressler. I go by Beth. I am the coordinator for YKHC's Diabetes Prevention and Control Department. We are a grant-funded program through the Special Diabetes Program for Indians, which is a nationwide grant. We are one of 19 grantees in the state of Alaska. Because of the grant, we are able to offer a plethora of services to the region, including clinical services and outreach services. We have a team of staff that includes dietitian, nurses, pharmacists, as well as outreach people. With this group, we are able to offer group medical appointments for patients from the region that have diabetes. We offer case management services to ensure that our clients with diabetes are getting all of the care that is recommended for people with diabetes. We have a support group that happens monthly. We offer diabetes self-management education classes where people can participate in a group and learn about diabetes management. And we also offer various outreach events throughout the region.
Thank you, Beth. So now I'm going to introduce our diabetes pharmacist, Catherine Reynolds.
Hi, this is Catherine Reynolds. I work as a diabetes pharmacist on the team. I review medications for patients with diabetes, prediabetes, and gestational diabetes, and make sure that they're safe and that they're working. I've lived in Bethel for over 4 years, and this is, I'm going into my third year on the team.
And next we have Amber Jones, Diabetes Outreach Specialist for the Diabetes Department.
My name is Amber Jones, and I'm one of the Outreach Specialists in the Diabetes Department. As an Outreach Specialist, I get to travel out to the different villages in our region to give educational presentations and do fun activities with the kids. We also do activities here in Bethel, such as wellness walks, which happen every Monday at noon, and we even do some cooking classes and some other fun activities. If you're interested in getting us to come out to do outreach with your group or community, please give us a call at the diabetes main number, which is 543-6133.
I'd like to introduce Abby Miller, one of our diabetes case managers and nurses.
My name is Abigail Miller, and I'm a registered nurse. I've been living in Bethel for over 4 years. I've been with the Diabetes Prevention and Control Department since the beginning of 2018. We all wear various hats in our department. Some of the hats I work as a case manager for people with diabetes, prediabetes, and gestational diabetes. I also work as a clinical diabetes educator providing care here in Bethel and throughout the 58 villages in the YK Delta.
And now we have Rachel Spaulding, our diabetes registered dietitian.
Hi, my name is Rachel Spaulding. I'm a registered dietitian in the Diabetes Department. I'm originally from the Seattle area, and I'm a member of the Siletz Indian Tribe on the Oregon coast. I've traveled quite a bit, and I enjoy learning about different cultures, which is what brought me to Bethel in March of this year. I have a passion for helping people improve their health through healthy eating and exercise. My job as a dietitian is I like to do one-on-one appointments with people, which I think a lot of people are afraid to see me because they think, oh, I don't want to see the dietitian because she's going to put me on a diet or she's going to tell me that I can't eat some of my favorite foods. And that is not what I do. I really believe that eating should be an enjoyable experience. And I love to sit down with people and teach them how they can make healthy choices while continuing to eat the foods that they love. So I work at the hospital in here in Bethel, and I also do village travel, which I really enjoy doing as well, getting out and meeting people in the community and meeting people face-to-face and in group medical appointments as well. If you would like to come and see me, I would love to sit down with people one-on-one or in a group setting to help teach you about healthy eating.
Now I'd like to bring back Catherine Reynolds to share general information
about diabetes.
About diabetes.
Diabetes is a disease when you have high levels of blood sugar, also known as glucose, in the blood over a long period of time. This could be months, years. This high blood sugar or glucose in your blood happens when your body is unable to produce enough insulin. Now, insulin is a hormone that's made by an organ in your body called the pancreas, and it helps lower your blood sugar by taking the sugar from your blood and putting it into your muscles or your brain for energy or for storage for later. You can use this energy when you exercise or when you're studying for a test. There are a few types of diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is insulin dependent. So what that means is your body doesn't make any insulin, and so you have to use insulin through shots in your skin. Type 1 diabetes usually happens in young children or young teenagers, usually doesn't happen to adults. Now, type 2 diabetes, we used to call adult onset diabetes, happens when your insulin stops working as well as it used to. And so it's unable to get all that sugar out of your blood. Now, we used to call it adult onset because it used to only happen in adults after they've had high blood sugar for a long time. However, we are now seeing that there are a lot of children who maybe have unhealthy diets that are developing type 2 diabetes. Then there's gestational diabetes, or we say diabetes during pregnancy. This happens due to the mom's hormones during pregnancy that makes her insulin not work very well. And then we have a category of people who we say have pre-diabetes. And what this means is that their blood sugars are going up, but not high enough to be diabetes, but high enough to be at risk for diabetes. And so we also sometimes treat these people as diabetes to prevent them from getting diabetes. Now, the main reason we treat diabetes is to prevent the complications from diabetes. So when you have long-standing high blood sugars, this can lead to having a heart attack or a stroke, also kidney failure or requiring dialysis, blindness, losing the feeling in your hands or feet, having wounds on your feet that would lead to amputations. So they're all very serious reasons why we want to control blood sugar. There are several risk factors for having diabetes. If you have a family history of diabetes, this is especially important for people with type 1 diabetes. That's often a family history related, but also type 2. And with type 2, a lot of times it's the diet of the whole family. So if your whole family, for example, drinks soda with every meal, then all the members of the family are at risk for type 2 diabetes. Also, a lack of physical activity. So you're not using that energy that was stored in your muscle cells. Being overweight, having more fat on your body does make it harder for that insulin to do its job and get the sugar in your muscle cells. Also, being over the age of 40, as we get older, our bodies tend to slow down. And so just being older increases your risk. And then also race or ethnicity. So we have noticed that specifically Alaskan Natives are at very high risk of developing diabetes. It's probably because a lot of Alaskan Natives used to just eat a native diet for a very long time. But with the introduction of grocery stores and Western food, it could be diet related as well. So some symptoms of diabetes, if you're feeling these symptoms and you're concerned, you can go to your doctor and ask for a screening for diabetes. If you feel very thirsty all the time, like you're drinking water, but it's not enough. Also, if you are urinating very often. Blurry vision, feeling extremely tired or fatigued. You have cuts or bruises on your skin that are slow to heal. You have genital infections or other infections that are also very slow to heal or that come back very frequently. You feel very hungry even when you eat. And you have tingling or pain or numbness in your hands or your feet. So again, if you feel any of those, it might be a good idea to make an appointment and have yourself screened for diabetes. Now, a question that I often get is diabetes curable or reversible? This is an interesting question. Technically, because diabetes is a chronic condition, you live with it forever once you have it. Now, a lot of times with proper diet and exercise, you can control diabetes on your own without medicine. But that's something that you would have to talk to your doctor or the diabetes team about. Now, what are some ways to prevent diabetes? Definitely physical activity. So walking for 30 minutes 5 days a week, or running, or swimming, or doing a circuit workout would be helpful to prevent diabetes. Also, healthy eating. So reducing sugary sweetened beverages that you drink, like soda or sugary coffee or juice. Eating healthy foods, so limiting junk food and trying to eat vegetables, whole grains. Those will all help to prevent diabetes. And then having regular exams with your provider so that they can monitor you and warn you if you're at risk for diabetes. Now, how is diabetes diagnosed? We can do a blood test. It's called an A1C, and it measures your blood sugar over the past 3 months and takes an average. We compare that number to a set of numbers we have, and depending on the number, tells us whether a person has diabetes or prediabetes or has normal blood sugar. It's a good idea to get this blood test at least once a year, and then if you have diabetes, we do it more often than that. And that's diabetes.
You're listening to the Wellness Wednesday show hosted by the YKHC Diabetes Prevention Control Department. I would just like to let our listeners know that this is pre-recorded, so you would not be able to call in with your questions or comments. But if you do have questions or comments, please feel free to email those to the Diabetes Department. Our email is diabetes_program@ykhc.org. You can also give us a call at 543-6133. So our topic today is about pharmacy and medications, because October is known as American Pharmacist Month. And today we have a pharmacy student by the name of Luke Malik helping me with the show today. Want to introduce yourself, Luke?
Sure. So I'm Luke, a pharmacy student in their last year of the pharmacy program from Purdue. So all the way from down in Indiana. And I've been in Bethel for about 2 weeks now, and I've loved it so far.
Thank you, Luke. So, talking about pharmacy and pharmacists, are they all the same, or are there specialized areas within the pharmacy field?
Yeah, so there are a lot of different opportunities for pharmacists. A lot of people think of your pharmacists in CVS, in Walgreens, in your outpatient clinic, and those are known as community pharmacists, and so they give immunizations, they'll provide education and counseling, they assess the appropriateness of your therapy and if it's safe, and really look at, you know, what is best for that patient from the information that they have. Other pharmacists go on to a more clinical setting, so some can specialize after a couple years of residency after graduating and go into an area such as oncology, which would be cancer care. They can get involved in cardiology or pediatrics, where they're caring for children and their needs. Some even go into an area called ambulatory care. And what's really unique about ambulatory care is one, it's not ambulances, like a lot of people think, and it's not emergency medicine. It's actually managing patients' chronic diseases, like high blood pressure, like diabetes, high cholesterol, even smoking cessation, and weight loss can be addressed in those settings. In these clinical settings, pharmacists will look at labs, they'll look at medical histories, they'll look at your medications that you're on, and really get a good whole picture of a patient and then determine what is the best treatment for that patient as an individual. Then some pharmacists get involved in industry, which is largely with companies that are making and testing medications. So they can get involved in marketing, advertising, manufacturing, research, and other areas like that. And then some even go into academics, where they do research and teach at a university level.
Okay. So there's a lot of different things for people that, you know, have different interests.
For sure.
There was a student I met a couple of years ago where he really liked growing his own plants and stuff. So he's leaning more towards growing his own medicine. I believe that is a field of pharmacy too, right?
That's really interesting. Honestly, I haven't heard of that specific field of pharmacy, but I don't doubt it.
So one of the things that always blows my mind is when speaking with our on-hand pharmacist in the diabetes department, Catherine or Elizabeth, our diabetes coordinator, whenever we're going through some medical terminology, they're always like rattling off different medications like right there on the fly. And I always think, do pharmacists just have a running tally of like the medications and their uses in like a mental database? And do you even have to like go and review any of this documentation after you've been exposed to it for so long?
Yeah. I really enjoy the phrase mental database. I mean, essentially, I would have to say, I mean, yeah, we do. You know, we go to undergrad and then we spend 4 years in pharmacy school learning, you know, about the medications, their ins and outs, the diseases that they treat, and we graduate with our doctor of pharmacy, specializing in medications. And so I think, I would say we do have a mental database. You know, it's continually growing. Nobody knows everything. We have resources available to us. And in addition to that, we work to use that database. We work to use that knowledge so that we can apply it to treat patients as effectively as possible.
All right. And medical information is always changing, right?
Absolutely.
Again, you know, Catherine and Elizabeth are always researching or reading about new medications coming out or how different drug treatment plans can affect patients of certain demographics or if they meet the certain criteria. So that's changing like on a daily basis. So always got to be on point of staying current with the changing medical field.
For sure. It's always changing.
So that leads into one of the things that I hear a lot is, does somebody with diabetes have to take medication? Like as soon as they're diagnosed with it, is it just immediate, like, here are all these different medications for you to treat diabetes, or can it be managed in other ways?
Yeah, and, you know, that really depends on the patient and the kind of diabetes that they have. And so I guess before I get into that, I'll just do a quick rundown on diabetes because I'm going to be using a lot of terminology that might be confusing or just not familiar with some people. When you eat, right, your blood sugar goes up, because you're absorbing sugar from the food that you're eating, your body's converting other things into sugar, and your body uses that as fuel. It uses that sugar that's in your blood as a source of fuel and energy. So normally, an organ in your body called the pancreas will release insulin, and that lets your cells take in that sugar and use it as energy. Otherwise, that sugar can't get in. So in diabetes, the body is either not producing enough insulin, it might not be producing insulin at all, or your body's just not very sensitive to the effects of insulin. That means that your blood sugar or the sugar that's in your blood, right, is going to be staying too high for too long, and that can lead to organ damage over a period of time. So we really try to avoid that, and that's why we treat diabetes. So to get back to the question, is somebody who has diabetes needing to take medication? It depends. So if they have type 1, their pancreas is not making insulin, really, in most cases at all. And so we are going to have to treat that. They are going to have to replace the insulin that they're not getting. If they have type 2 diabetes, their pancreas might be making insulin, but it might not be enough insulin, or their body is just resistant to insulin. And so if they have type 2 gestational diabetes, which is diabetes when you're pregnant, or prediabetes, which a lot of people refer to as just borderline diabetes, then there is the possibility that you can do enough with diet and exercise to control that and keep your blood sugar low. Some people control it with diet and exercise, and some people don't. Some people need extra help. And in those cases, we would use medications. So it can be very dependent on the patient.
And because it's dependent on the patient, diabetes is a progressive disease, right? Like, you can be doing everything right, but diabetes is still taking a toll on your body, and you may need that extra help from medications.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, if you need to, definitely there are medications available, and yeah, it is progressive in a lot of cases. So that's something to be aware of too.
So if you have any questions about any of this for our listeners, you know, just talk to your health aides, make a schedule to or appointment to meet with your provider, or even, you know, call the diabetes department if you have any further questions on, you know, like the types of diabetes, if you're at risk. Our number is 543-6133. And again, I just want to reiterate for you to go and, you know, just talk to your local provider, which may be your local health aide. So with the medications, there's a lot of different meds out there to treat diabetes. What are some of the most common ones that is used in the nation?
Yeah, and there are a few different classes of medications that people use to treat and manage their diabetes. Some medications make your cells more sensitive to insulin. Some control how much insulin is released from your pancreas or increase the amount of insulin that's released. Others are insulin itself, and so we're just able to inject insulin. And some flush out excess sugar in your urine. So that's kind of a unique mechanism too. I would say one of the most common of the commons is metformin. It sensitizes your body to insulin, it stops the liver from making extra sugar, and it has a lot of other benefits too. So it helps reduce cholesterol, it reduces the risk of heart attacks and stroke. And so, you know, I've heard some people say we need to throw metformin in the water. And, you know, maybe not go that far, but patients that do have diabetes can really benefit from metformin if they're able to take it and if they're good candidates for it. Other medications that we use in conjunction with diabetes medications are often high blood pressure medications, because there are certain classes that actually help to reverse some of the damage that diabetes does to the kidneys. So that's really beneficial as well. And there's also cholesterol medications and aspirin, which help reduce the risk of heart attacks and strokes, which is increased in diabetes.
Okay. So when somebody comes in at their appointment and they get diagnosed with diabetes or some other chronic health issue, even, you know, something that, you know, like the common cold or something, how does a pharmacist go about, or maybe even the provider, go about figuring out which medication to give to the patient?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. And there are a lot of factors that we take into account when determining what medication is best for that patient. Mm-hmm. So we look at their age. We look at any allergies they might have, other medications that they're on, because we don't want them to interact in a negative way. We look at what the patient has tried in the past, because that can be a good indicator for what might work or might not work in the future. We look at their tobacco and alcohol use, because those things can also interact with medications. We also look at their lab results, blood work, those kinds of things, and side effects that they might be experiencing. So we just really try to take a good whole look at the patient and treat them as an individual.
How long does that normally take? Because I know when I go into the, if I have an appointment and I get prescribed new medication, this stuff happens relatively quickly.
You know, it does. Part. Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of background work that's done, too, when we're seeing patients. For the most part, you know, we'll go into their chart, look at their medical records, and pull everything that we can ahead of time. So that can take a while. But a lot of times, we're just able to pull all of this information together in a pretty quick way. You know, we figure out what questions to ask patients, what information we want to gather from them. And then we are able to use our mental database, right, and apply what we know to what we've been given.
So when somebody does come in that has diabetes, when they meet with their provider, does the provider focus only on managing that diabetes, or will there be other health complications that may need to be addressed first or alongside diabetes?
Yeah, definitely. You know, in a diabetes appointment, a lot of times it will primarily be about diabetes. That's just the main focus of that appointment specifically. But we really do try to look at everything that a patient is going through. So we'll look at, you know, their blood pressure to see if they have high blood pressure. We'll look at cholesterol to see if that's in a good and healthy range. And the thing is, there are a lot of complications and a lot of disease states and a lot of different things that go along with diabetes, because your body kind of reacts to things a little bit differently when you have diabetes than it would otherwise. And really, the number one reason that we lower blood sugar is to prevent some of these other chronic complications, like that high cholesterol, like the risk of heart attacks and strokes, the risk of foot amputations and blindness, and any kind of decline in kidney function. So we try to look at everything, and if there's anything that we notice that's out of the ordinary, we will try to address that at least at some point.
So when somebody is starting a new medication, should someone be checking their blood sugar levels? And of course, this someone is a person with diabetes. Do they need to continuously check their blood sugar levels after starting, let's say, metformin as an example?
Yeah, you know, it's really important for patients that have diabetes to regularly check their blood sugar. That allows us as providers, one, to know, you know, is the medication working? What medications do we need to try? What do we need to do to make sure that you are being taken care of as well as you can be? It also helps us realize, you know, what parts of the day need to be addressed. Sometimes people's blood sugars are higher in the morning than they would be in the afternoon. So that's a way to monitor things. And we need to just see how things are progressing on a day-to-day basis to make sure that levels are where you want them to be. So it is really important for patients with diabetes to regularly check their blood sugar, especially after starting a new medication, because that can change blood sugar readings as well.
So one of the things that comes up quite frequently is sometimes people can't remember to, or they can't, it's not that they can't remember, they just don't remember to check their blood sugar level or check their blood sugars regularly. So what are some self-monitoring tips you can possibly share with our listeners?
Yeah, so, you know, if they're having trouble remembering, there's a few things that they can do, right? One of those would be to set alarms on your phone. That's a big help for a lot of people. It's a big help for me for remembering things. And that'll go off and you can, you know, remember to check your blood sugar or take your medicine. So if they're taking their blood sugar and they're having, you know, a hard time remembering what that was, and really in any case, they should probably write that down, because they're going to be checking a lot of times, multiple times a day. And that's helpful to bring in to providers so that we can see what's going on with their blood sugar and, you know, address that. So they can do a blood glucose log, and glucose just being another word for sugar, so a blood sugar log. And they will test their blood sugar, write down the number, the time of day, and the date, and just keep a running record of that, bring that into their next appointment, and that's helpful for them to see, so they can see how food and medications affect their blood sugar levels. And that's helpful for us as providers to see, so we can see the same things and make any changes that are needed. Another good thing to do would be to make a food diary. So that's where you do something really similar to the blood glucose, only you're recording what you ate, because your food has a really big impact on your blood sugar levels. It can either drive them way up, or it can help them stay a little more steady, depending on what you eat. And there's also a really cool thing that's relatively new called continuous glucose monitoring. So it's sort of like a patch that you can put on your arm, on your stomach area. There is a needle involved, but what it does is records your blood sugar every few minutes. And so you can get a really continuous and real-time look at what your blood sugar levels are, and it will record that so we can see peaks and valleys in blood sugars. We can see what time of day they go up and how it trends throughout the day and throughout the weeks and months. That's a really cool new feature that's out there now.
Nice. I actually tried a continuous glucose monitoring, also known as CGM, at least to me. And just seeing the results over a week's time, I just had it on the back of my arm, and just seeing how my sugar levels kind of spike up at certain times of the day, and looking back at the log after, you know, I scanned it into the system, I was like, I could see exactly when I started eating dinner or when I got back to my like regular routine after doing so much village travel. You know, like I wasn't getting as much of my normal meals as I normally do when I'm at home, and I could just see my sugar levels spike up a bit. And it was just really interesting to see that correlation or that happen on the screen as like just data, like just spikes of data on the thing.
Yeah, that is a really cool feature, and it was helpful for you to see, right? You could make changes that were needed, or, you know, think of things that you could do to help balance things out.
Right. Yeah, so, and you could also see, like, the time of night that I decided to start eating, too. I was like, why did I have, you know, that snack at 11:30 at night, and I went to bed, like, 30 minutes later? So it's just little things like that that you don't really think about, but then, you know, you could see the results of it, like, almost immediately. Like, when I checked it the next morning, I'm like, oh, okay, this might be a problem. Going on medications and how things can affect it, there's a high tobacco use in our region. Will tobacco use or even alcohol use affect any medications that our patients are taking or somebody takes?
Yeah, you know, they can. Tobacco and alcohol can both affect how your body gets rid of or metabolizes medications. So it can affect, you know, how long they stay in your system or how fast they're removed. It can affect even what they turn into and what kind of changed chemicals, I guess, quote unquote, they turn into in a way. Another thing to be aware of is that they can make your medications less effective, potentially, right? They can work against your medicines, especially tobacco. So say you're trying to lower your blood pressure, but you're smoking or chewing tobacco. That can further increase your blood pressure and work directly against the medication that you're taking, essentially nullifying it. So that is something to be aware of. They also increase the risk of side effects and the severity of side effects. Right. So, I mean, alcohol, for example, will make you tired, make you dizzy, depending on how much you drink. And there are a lot of medications that can do that, too. And so that's something to be aware of. Those effects will add on top of each other. And then something to note, too, since we've been talking about diabetes so much, is that alcohol can have a pretty big impact on your blood sugar. So excessive drinking or binge drinking can cause your blood sugar to drop to a dangerously low level, especially if you're taking insulin and those kinds of things. Moderate use can actually increase your blood sugar and kind of work against your diabetes medications. So, you know, occasional use of alcohol a lot of times is fine in moderation, but it is something to be aware of.
So going on or expanding on that, we talked about keeping a food diary and all that, and my little anecdote or story about the times of day that I was eating and seeing immediate results or spikes in my blood glucose levels. Would somebody's diet affect how their medication is affecting them?
Yeah, you know, diet can play a really big role in any disease state and in the medications. For one, they can affect the absorption. Some medications need to be taken without food. Some need to be taken with food. In the case of diabetes, some insulins and some other medications for diabetes really need to be taken with meals and meals only. Otherwise, your blood sugars could get too low. There are also some foods that can drive up cholesterol, for example. You know, if you're eating foods that have a lot of a really high fat content for a long period of time, that's going to contribute to risks with your heart and risks with increased cholesterol. If you're eating a lot of sugary foods like cake and ice cream and, you know, all the good stuff, right, that can drive up your blood sugar. And that can be negative and work against your diabetes medications. And, of course, in moderation, these things are fine. But it is something to be aware of. They can have a big effect.
Yeah, so not eating it with every meal, essentially.
Right? Yeah, yeah. Every once in a while is definitely fine, you know, for most people. But just, you know, something to be aware of how it affects you.
So other things that come up as of recently, I see it on Facebook all the time, of health supplements or certain types of vitamins or things you could get over-the-counter things. Will any of those health supplements have an effect on somebody's medication or have an effect on somebody's diabetes?
They can, yeah. You know, there are a lot of different over-the-counter meds. There are a lot of herbal medications. Even some herbal teas can have effects on people's disease states and their medications. So it is really important that you tell your pharmacist or your healthcare provider what you're taking, if you're taking over-the-counters and any kind of herbal supplements. They can interact with medications and really can cause us to either choose or not choose certain medications over others, too. So also,
sometimes, especially with antibiotics, people have a hard time adhering to a treatment plan or a medication plan prescribed to them. Can you describe how that is or why that is so important to stick to a medication plan or a treatment plan set by your provider or pharmacist?
Sure. I mean, something that I like to say is that medications don't work if you don't take them, right? So, I mean, if you're not using them, they're not going to do anything for you except sit on your counter and, you know, if you're paying for them, take up your money. But yeah, I mean, for example, you know, if a patient is prescribed metformin, right, they're using that to process their glucose, they're using that for diabetes. If they don't take it, their blood sugar levels could remain too high for too long, and that can lead to other health complications and those health complications that are associated with diabetes. And that can, you know, lead to negative outcomes for them, and we don't want that. Also, like, you know, you mentioned antibiotics. A lot of times when people are sick, their blood sugar levels can go up. And so that's something to be aware of. So if that infection isn't gotten rid of, if the antibiotics are not taken, one, they might just continue to have the infection, which is no fun. And two, it can lead to continually high blood sugar levels too, which can, like I said earlier, cause negative effects in the rest of your body.
So when somebody is prescribed a new medication, what are some questions that they should ask their provider or their pharmacist when prescribed a new medication?
Yeah, whenever you're prescribed a new medication, please ask questions. We, as pharmacists, we love to answer them. I'm sure other healthcare providers do as well. So ask as many questions as you want and as you can, really. We want to get that knowledge out there. But a few really good ones to ask would be, you know, what is it supposed to do? How does it work? Why am I using this medication? You'd be surprised at how many people don't really know what their medications are being used for. And that's something that is really important for people to understand. Another one would be, you know, when and how do I take the medication? You know, does the medication have anything that might cause an allergic reaction? You know, let us know your allergies and then we can, you know, determine, is this medication safe for you or could you potentially react to it? Should I avoid alcohol? Are there any foods that I should avoid? That would be a good one to ask. Any side effects that you should expect? And what to do if you forget to take your medications or take the dose incorrectly, if you take too much or too little of it? Is it safe to become pregnant or breastfeed while taking this medication? There's a couple others might be, you know, if you're using insulin, say, those are injections. And you have to really know how to get rid of those needles, get rid of those syringes in a safe way so that other people aren't stuck with those needles too. So figuring out how to do that would be beneficial. And then how to store the medication and how long you should keep it. That's just a quick rundown of a list of good questions that would be good to ask.
Right. So anything with a syringe or needle will need to be disposed of. So what are actually some things to put those needles in, like around the house? You don't just want to leave them lying out for somebody to get poked, right?
For sure, for sure. And, you know, some people will get an actual sharps container. It's like a red container. That's kind of the ideal. You know, it protects people from getting into it to some degree and helps keep people from getting stuck by needles laying around. Some kind of makeshift sharps containers to store used needles in would be things like, thick plastic juice containers or, milk jugs that are plastic and those kinds of things.
Okay. I know that a lot of people here drink coffee, so maybe the coffee cans or something can be repurposed after all the coffee's gone, of course, to be used as a sharps container. And with people with diabetes, you're also supposed to be checking your blood sugar multiple times a day. And to do that, you have to use something called a lancet to poke your skin. That would also be something that you would need to dispose of correctly. So that kind of brings us to the close of our show. We just discussed the various questions that you should ask your pharmacist before starting or when starting a new medication. Luke, do you have anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
You know, nothing much. I just want to encourage everybody to talk to their healthcare providers, talk to their pharmacists. We're more than happy to help with any questions you might have.
Thank you. So again, you could also reach out to your local health aides. And if you have any questions about diabetes, feel free to give the diabetes department a call. Our number is 907-543-6133. You could also email us at diabetes_program@ykhc.org. So that's pretty much all we have today. Thank you, Luke, for joining us on this week's Wellness Wednesday show.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great time.
All right. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.